Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarb. I'm your host for the hour with my good friend and neighbor, Mike Metz of Milford Township and keeper of the Prairie Wind Prairie. Hey, Mike.
Hello, Pat.
How are you this fine day?
Oh, just cooking with gas today. The rain has been a blessing.
I had a half an inch, and I hope it doesn't rain on our pledge drive parade today.
You know, and that's speaking of blessings, we need to encourage our listeners to please pledge, please support KHOI, your community radio station.
All you members out there, please consider becoming a sustaining member. You can contact Ruth Wiedemeyer, our KHOI treasurer. She'll set you up. You can add a couple bucks. You probably won't even miss it. We're in the post-COVID era. Things are going to start moving again. But don't forget us here at KHOI, that basic membership of $60 a year, $5 a month. If you can increase that a couple bucks, why not?
Yes, we're located at 410 Douglas, and we're happy if you drop in during normal business hours. And any amount, actually, we will encourage you to participate. We do have those levels, as Pat has said. But go to KHOIFM.org if you decide that you want to support us online.
And the sky's the limit. So go ahead and increase the rain on our parade. Let's nourish this station into sustainability with our sustainable pledges. There's a lot ahead on Local Talk, and I thought a Peregrine Falcon update is appropriate. There are two pairs in downtown Des Moines, one at the Capitol, in Iowa's first nest site since 1993 at the American Enterprise Building at 601 6th Avenue. Both pairs are on site and hopefully incubating eggs. But this is the weekend that a falcon nest siter, it's called an eyrie, with a nest cam is at the website RaptorResourceProject/GSB Falcons. That GSB stands for Great Spirit Bluff in far southeast Minnesota. About a month ago, we saw the birds mating. It's been a morning exercise of mine to go to that website and follow the developments. She's been incubating about 33 days. So this should be the weekend that there'll be little hatchlings, little falcons, once again on the cliffs of southeast Minnesota, just up the way from northeast Iowa. So now let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week.
The coronavirus and a new law banning mask-wearing mandates all made big news in the Ames Tribune last week. Last Friday, the Trib reported that 7 more cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 10,648. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 3.5%. The Trib also reported on a new state law that said leaders of Iowa school districts could not require students or staff to wear masks, and that cities and counties could not impose mask mandates. That law had passed the State House and State Senate in the last hours of this year's legislative session, and school districts around the state, including Ames, reacted quickly. In Ames, the district told families of students that it still believes masks are a key part of the effort to keep students and staff safe, but it cannot require that they be worn. It said masks would still be required when a student is on a school bus. Gilbert school administrators said they had hoped to finish the school year with the same virus mitigation that it had had success with, but with the new law, that was over. The Nevada district said it would let parents, students, and members of the public make their own decision about masks. Two other districts, Ballard and Roland Story, had already made masks optional before the new law went into effect. And local lawmakers reacted to the new mask law. Democratic State Senator Herman Kornbach of Ames called it, in his words, reckless policy driven by an extreme right-wing ideology that denies science. Democratic State House member Beth Wessel Crochelle of Ames said Republican arguments about personal freedom from mask wearing are, in her words, absolutely ridiculous, adding that it doesn't hurt to wear a mask. Republican lawmakers said the law came in response to comments from parents who had concerns about schools' mask mandates. There was more last Friday, including word that Iowa State University will have no fan limitations this coming football season at Jack Trice Stadium. That means the stadium will be packed with 61,000 fans this year after having limited attendance last year because of the coronavirus pandemic. And there was word that Iowa State University, along with the University of Iowa and the University of Northern Iowa, would not see an increase in state funding or a freeze in tuition this coming year. State lawmakers had refused the Board of Regents' request for more state money. Saturday's Trib reported that 6 more cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 10,654 since the pandemic started. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 3.2%. There was also word that Governor Reynolds had signed a law that will withhold state grants and contracts from local governments or businesses that require customers to prove they have received the coronavirus vaccine. The law went into effect immediately. There was also word that the state legislature had adjourned this year's session without approving limits on transgender girls and women's ability to compete in girls and women's athletics, in spite of the governor's push for such legislation this year. The governor had told Fox News that she hoped to have such legislation on her desk by the end of the session. That did not happen. And the Trib had word that a new plaza will be built next to the Memorial Union on the Iowa State University campus. It will honor black fraternities and sororities. Groundbreaking was set to take place last Saturday. Sunday's Trib reported that police departments across the nation are struggling to recruit and train officers, and local police agencies are not immune. The Ames Police Department is down 5 officers from the budgeted 57 positions it has. 2 more officers are set to leave next month. That will be the largest number of positions not filled in the department in more than 2 decades. Commander Jason Tuttle said some officers burned out of the job and did not feel supported by the community. The Iowa State University Police Department has 8 or 9 vacancies, while the Nevada Police Department has only 5 officers working. Full-time staffing would mean 11 officers would be on the job in Nevada. There was also word that state lawmakers had ended this year's session without passing a bill that would have required fuel sold in Iowa to contain higher blends of ethanol and biodiesel, products that are made using the state's 2 biggest crops. Iowa leads the nation in ethanol and biodiesel production and is a leader in growing corn and soybeans, the raw materials needed to make the biofuels. About half the state's corn crop goes to making ethanol. The state biodiesel board blamed the failure to pass a bill requiring higher blends of ethanol and biodiesel on misinformation from the Fuel and Transportation Coalition. The Trib also reported that even though Iowa lawmakers had wrapped up this year's session, they will reconvene later this year to redraw state legislative and congressional district maps. Legislative maps must be approved and sent to the governor by September 1st. There is no similar deadline for congressional redistricting. And there was a report that Iowa's jobless rate had gone up for the second time in 3 months. Non-farm employment dropped by nearly 6,000 workers from March to April. That upped the state's unemployment rate to 3.8% from the 3.7% it had been in March. Tuesday's paper reported that 13 more cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 10,667. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 3.5%. The Trib also had word about recent student coronavirus cases in area school districts. The Ames School District reported no recent positive cases in the preschool, the elementary schools, or the middle school, and fewer than 6 positive cases in the high school. The Ballard School District reported fewer than 6 positive cases among students there. The Gilbert School District, the Nevada School District, and the Roland Story School District each reported no recent positive cases among students. The Trib also reported that an Iowa State University professor has health concerns in his family that leave him wanting to be able to ask students to wear masks during office hours, but that the State Board of Regents has decided faculty do not have that ability. And Governor Reynolds has signed a law banning mask mandates by schools and other government entities. ISU political science professor Dave Peterson says his concern is about the ability to control what happens in his own office, and that he does not have the same concerns about classrooms because they are bigger and better ventilated. Tuesday's Trib also reported that Ames Mayor John Hala had announced he will run for a second term this November. Hala was sworn into office in 2018, taking over for retiring Mayor Ann Campbell. Hala is touting the city's work during his term on environmental sustainability, inclusion and diversity efforts, and expanded quality of life opportunities. The election will take place November 2nd. And there was also a summary about the state legislature, which had finished its session last week. Republican lawmakers passed many of their top priorities, ranging from a sweeping tax cut to an anti-abortion constitutional amendment. Wednesday's Trib reported that it was up to Iowa school districts to decide whether they are in compliance with federal rules about masks on buses. And those federal rules remain in place even after passage of the state's law banning mask mandates. The Ames School District cited that federal mandate to continue requiring masks when children ride school buses. The Ballard School District has made masks optional on its buses. The Urbandale, West Des Moines, and Burlington districts all stopped requiring masks on buses last week. There was also word that the coronavirus pandemic might have hastened Iowa's shift toward an unwanted milestone, fewer births than deaths in the state each year. The state has been going through a baby bust for more than a decade, and that accelerated last year and the first 2 months of this one. Meanwhile, the number of Iowa deaths went up 16% last year, meaning the death total nearly equaled the number of children born in the state. And there was word that an Iowa farmer was leading a nationwide class action lawsuit against the makers of a commonly used weed killer linked to Parkinson's disease. That lawsuit was filed in the past 2 weeks against the makers of Paraquat, an herbicide banned by China and many other nations, but which is still legal to sell and use in the United States. Yesterday's Trib reported that the Ames City Council had voted to repeal the city's mask mandate. Other cities around the state, including Des Moines, Iowa City, and Cedar Rapids, had already modified or rescinded their mask mandates after the U.S. Centers for Disease Control had issued new guidance that vaccinated people could take part in indoor and outdoor activities without wearing masks. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds had also signed a law last week that barred state school districts from requiring students to wear masks and Iowa cities and counties from imposing mask mandates. The Story County Board of Supervisors also rescinded its countywide mask mandate this week after a request from the county's Board of Health. Private businesses can continue to require customers to wear masks. Meanwhile, five more cases of the coronavirus were confirmed in Story County, bringing the total number of cases in the county to 10,677 since the pandemic started. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 3.8%. The Trib also had word that the search for a new Boone High School principal had been whittled down to two candidates out of the 18 people who had applied. Current Boone principal Chris Byam has resigned effective June 30th. The new principal will take the position the next day. There was also word that the state of Iowa had seen a big uptick in fraudulent jobless claims since last year. The state has seen benefits applied for in the names of identity theft victims. And there was a report that dozens of Iowa residents, lawmakers, and environmental groups want the state's natural resources director to review a decision to allow a cattle feedlot near an environmentally sensitive creek in the northeast part of the state. The issue involves the Supreme Beef Project, an 11,600-head open-lot cattle feed operation near the headwaters of Bloody Run Creek in Clayton County. And that is your summary of quite a week of news indeed from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, ready, willing, and able to take the weekend off, but planning to return to this same virtual seat right here on Local Talk on Monday, Memorial Day, when I'll have word on what's been making news around the state. I hope you can be here as well. Between now and then, have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News, and the music interlude is Daybreak Vision by R. Carlos Nakai. It's pledge time. Please realize that on community radio, we periodically make these requests. We're going to bring on a voice that some of our listeners have heard previously, Larry Stone. He's a retired journalist for the Des Moines Register. And this is what community radio is all about. You know, we still provide a voice to individuals like Larry Stone. He's living in Clayton County. And there's an unfolding story concerning a trout stream in that far northeastern section of Iowa known as the Driftless Area. This is territory that was not glaciated in the last Wisconsin glacial period. Its karst geologic topography is rife with cold water springs and sinkholes that takes surface water deep into the earth's subsoil. And there is a large cattle feedlot planned in an area of the watershed of the popular Bloody Run trout stream. But okay, Larry Stone, as a member of the Clayton County Conservation Board and a citizen of the natural world, we've got a situation on Bloody Run Creek. Could you give us some details, please?
Yeah, and I'll be speaking as an individual and as a passionate environmentalist and not representing the views of the Conservation Board. But long story, starting in 2017, there was a proposal to build a 11,600 head, I think it was, cattle lot in the watershed of Bloody Run Creek. The initial proposal was to use the manure from those cattle and other organic material from waste food, who knows what, to put through digesters to form natural gas eventually, you know, methane, and then scrub it to have saleable natural gas. This was the proposal that started in the spring of 2017. A very long, complicated story about some lawsuits involving the landowners and the developers, some problems with the Environmental Protection Agency and the need for permits for the construction, a lot of problems, but eventually it has now been transformed into still a 11,600 head cattle operation, but not with the methane digesters. And it would all be, the manure would go into a 39 million gallon lagoon and eventually would be spread or applied to 40 plus farms around Clayton County and perhaps one or two in Key County. In the interim, there's been a lot of discussion, some controversies with local people, and I'm one of them saying, good idea if you're trying to figure out a different way to manage livestock manure by producing energy from it with methane, but this is an experiment, and the experiment is in absolutely the wrong place because it was in the watershed of Bloody Run Creek, which is an outstanding Iowa water trout stream. It's in an area where there are of karst topography, which is fractured limestone that has a lot of cracks that lets surface water get down, hypothetically, into the groundwater. This area also is prone to form sinkholes, which is just another way for surface water to get down into the groundwater. Besides that, the operation facility is along Highway 18 and 52, the north side of 18 and 52, just east of Monona, Iowa, which is a prime route for tourists in northeast Iowa. Just so many things wrong with the idea. But it is, as of now, the DNR has approved the nutrient management plan to allow this facility to begin operating. A number of us looked closely at the nutrient management plan, and we believe that the DNR and the Supreme Beef, which is what the operation is called, have used incorrect information to calculate how much manure comes from the cattle, what the nitrogen and phosphorus content of that manure is, and how much fertilizer from that would be applied to the land in Clayton County. And we think that this is just irresponsible and breaking Iowa law, frankly, to put that much manure out on the land. We are in the process of continuing discussions and dialogue, I guess, with the DNR to get this corrected. But at this point, the DNR has approved their nutrient management plan. There are not cattle on the site as yet that we know of. When that will happen, I don't know, or if that will happen.
Well, you framed the situation quite well, Larry. I'm curious on is Supreme Beast. Are they the original owners that applied initially?
Yes, and originally it was called Walls Energy. The Walls family were some big Clayton County farmers, several members of that family, paired with a group called, I think the Feeder Creek group, and I'm not real. I don't want to get into myself legal trouble trying to describe that.
That's fair. Sure.
That relationship, but I do know there were some lawsuits back and forth, and Feeder Creek and the Walls family are no longer jointly involved in this. And then now it's Jared Walls, one of the Walls family, is sort of the head of Supreme Beef, and with some other family members, and perhaps, I really don't know, maybe some other investors involved.
Sure.
But it is now called Supreme Beef, but it's still at the same site with the same problems that it had initially.
Well, as I recall, it is an enclosed feedlot because, 10%? Has natural lighting or...
I should mention the DNR rules and the state laws are worded in such a way that it is considered, quote-unquote, an open feedlot if they are in a pen that has at least 10% of the... 10% unroofed. In other words, 10% of that enclosed pen must be open to the sky. And if that's the case, then it's an open feedlot. Essentially, to me, confinement is maybe a better description because the animals are confined in the pen and their manure is dealt with in that pen, and you know how it gets to the manure collection basin is it has to go there. It cannot run off into adjoining land. From that, it has to go to the basin, the way the rules are set up.
Well, and it's we are a nation of laws. It seems this is pushing the limits of some basic laws of nature.
Well, and the lagoon, you know, they had some pretty sophisticated dirt movers building this lagoon. You know, I don't know much about dirt moving, but the people seem to know what they were doing as far as building this lagoon, and then they also lined it with a plastic liner. But the essence of it is still in this part of northeast Iowa, it is not unheard of for just all of a sudden a sinkhole to open up anywhere. Mm-hmm. That anywhere happens to be underneath that lagoon. Hypothetically, the thing could rupture and the 39 million gallons could go down into the groundwater. Mm-hmm. The developers say, oh, no, we've taken precautions. This isn't going to happen, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well,
sure hope not.
Right. That's one situation of the 39 million gallons, and the other is when it's applied to the landscape. And as you mentioned, it could be applied in a field and a sinkhole. Are there other public meetings, or is this a done deal in Yellowstone?
As of now, the DNR has approved the nutrient management plan. And then supposedly the nutrient management plan is just that, applying the manure to fields. Applying those nutrients. Those nutrients are not even there yet because the cattle that will produce them aren't even there yet. And then once, assuming the cattle do get there, that manure will accumulate in that basin for months, years maybe, before it could be removed and applied to the land. You know, I think if I remember the plan correctly, the first nutrients or first manure would not be applied to fields until late this year. Now, it might even be longer than that. Mm-hmm. So until then, there's nothing that more to be done other than if were successful in persuading the DNR and that indeed their calculations are wrong and they need to be corrected, it's possible, legally again, I don't know, that the DNR could hypothetically could say, oh, we apologize, we used the wrong information, we shouldn't have approved that permit after all. Then you get into a lot of legal problems back and forth between the state agency and the people who they gave the permit to. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the situation as we see it right now.
And is there a website or where people could get further information?
There would be. The DNR sent out to everybody who had participated and asked questions about the process. There were more than 100 people made comments, written comments, and there was a Zoom public hearing where a few of us gave oral comments. Frankly, it's at least some possibility that there could be grounds for a lawsuit against the DNR saying you didn't follow your own rule. Yeah. The other appeals or approaches, I guess we don't know yet where that's going to go. One more thing I should mention, getting into the political discussion, Steve Vasey, in the process of getting her open records request, got copies of an email from Becky Sexton, who is operates Twin Lakes Environmental Services, which prepared the nutrient management plan for Supreme Beef. She emailed about a conversation that she had had with Jared Walls, who's one of the promoters, and also involving Senator Dan Zumbach, who is the chair of the Senate Ag Committee in the legislature, who also happens to be Jared Walls' father-in-law. And a conversation that they had, and lo and behold, the permit was approved. And pardon my cynicism, but that looks a little fishy.
Okay, well, thank you, Larry Stone, citizen of the natural world.
You've been listening to Larry Stone, local conservationist in Clayton County, concerning a feedlot planned in the headwaters of Bloody Run Trout Stream. This is Pat Schlarbaum, and now let's welcome Jess Mazur with the Sierra Club Environmental Organization and learn more. Hello, Jess.
How are you doing?
Great to have you with us and your strong environmental voice. Well, Iowa is an agricultural state, so why is it important to preserve what we have of our natural resources?
Well, I think that's the false narrative that we all think that we're operating in, is that we can only have one or the other. Uh-huh. And I really think that we can have both. We just have to rethink our priorities. Are our priorities maximum yield, maximum profits for giant corporations, or are our priorities agriculture that protects our soil, protects our water, and gives dignity to farmers? I think we can have both, and I think that this, sites like the Supreme Beef Factory Farm are examples of what we shouldn't be doing, because it's our natural resources have value too in the state. They bring value to local areas who rely on recreation, like the Bloody Run area. So we have to just rethink, there's value in natural resources.
And as Larry was kind of explaining, and I was just reading recently in the Des Moines Register, what is the next step for this proposal in Northeast Iowa?
Yeah, so right now, earlier this week, we filed a request with the Department of Natural Resources Director, Kayla Lyon, to use her authority under the Director's Discretion Rule, which is a special section of Iowa Code that says that the DNR can take into account local resources, public opinion, the sensitive makeup of the area, and not just rely on what's in their nutrient management plan. So we've formally asked Kayla Lyon to overturn the DNR's decision to approve it. We had 47 groups and legislators and community leaders sign on in support of that letter. So we're just kind of waiting to see what happens. We're going to be asking folks right now to contact Kayla Lyon yourself and add your name to that list of 47 and just let her know that, as in our directory, she needs to do the right thing and overturn the decision.
Is there a website where those names could be included?
Yes, we have it up on our Sierra Club Iowa chapter website. I can send you a link if you can't find it right away, but it should be one of the most recent blogs that we just uploaded.
Okay. If there's further developments, we'll kind of be watching this. I think it might behoove us to realize that this is far northeast Iowa. However, this type of situation would seem to be repeating.
Yeah, this is definitely, northeast Iowa is kind of a special place here just because of karst topography, and there's just a much greater chance of pollution of our aquifers and runoff, but it does happen all across the state, and every part of the state has their own special natural resource that's worth protecting, whether it's the Left Hills, whether it's our karst topography, whether it's, the hills in the south that are easily erodible. There's a lot of stuff to protect here because it's valuable in Iowa.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jess Mazur. Is there anything else?
No, I think that's it. Thank you, Pat.
Yeah, we'll stay abreast of this current situation. Thank you.
Sounds good. We'll keep you updated.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. I'm your host, Pat Schlarbaum, with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. And this is pledge time, Mike Metz.
Yes, it is. And we are filling in our listeners on an important event that is, of course, occurring in another part of the state. But we're all in this together, and it's the state community, but we're also thinking locally with our KHOI community radio. And I want to reach out to our listeners and say, please become a member so that you can hear what we have to offer. In some ways, that's just as much local news as the Skunk River watershed that we just recently had a ribbon cutting to honor Ames as a river city. Mm-hmm. And there's a river city located up in that part of the area, in the Elkader area. Mm-hmm. Where water connects us all. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, in connecting us all, please consider becoming a member of KHOI Community Radio. And you can do that by pledging and calling 292-2878. And that's a 515 area code. So 515-292-2878. Or donate online, khoifm.org, and follow the donate prompts.
And we're all connected. That is, that's for sure. Now let's welcome Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Hi, Pat. How are you?
Oh, I'm good today. How are you?
I'm good. It's a bit brisk this morning.
Well, yeah. I think in the high 30s. Who knew? But I had half an inch of rain, so I feel pretty good about that. Actually, I could feel a lot better if we'd get 2.5 inches, but that's beside the point. There's a lot of good things happening here recently. I enjoyed the stormwater project there on Welch Avenue going into Lake Laverne. Speaking of clean water project.
Absolutely. We cut the ribbon on that event yesterday on that street reconstruction, which featured the stormwater improvement features like the tree trenches that were really interesting to kind of get an up close look at. You can see how those tree trenches take water from the street. That water comes down the curb and gutter, and it's going quickly and it's picking up all the car drippings. Mm-hmm. And instead of going directly into our waterways, it diverts that water into these trenches where plant materials absorb and filter that water before it goes back into the environment, which is a nice thing to see.
Just a super project. Yes, indeed. Do you have any other announcements for the city?
Well, we do have a Memorial Day event coming up. The City of Ames actually doesn't coordinate that event, but the Ames Patriotic Council has always planned events around Memorial Day. And they have a speaker, Lieutenant retired Brian Eggers, will be their speaker at 11 a.m. on Monday. That's going to be a virtual presentation, so you can get that information from the Ames Patriotic Council Facebook page as to how to participate. And there are some morning ceremonies actually around the county. And so the Ames Patriotic Council is your source of information for those. Our John Hala is always involved in those, so we try to get that information out to people. And of course, most public buildings will be closed on that Monday.
Mm-hmm. Hope you have a good holiday. I'll think to mention that on Monday. We're different. I'll get on that website and share that those locations with everybody. But in the meantime, I'll list the website for today's program. And is there anything else?
Well, I just wanted to introduce the other city representative here today, which is Kelly Ahmed with our Parks and Recreation Department. As we were discussing this morning how chilly it is, it seems a strange weekend to be opening our pool. The idea of swimming outside today doesn't seem very appealing. We've had quite a range over the past few years of opening day temperatures, but I don't remember it ever being quite this brisk. But, you know, we haven't been able to open the pool for a while, so it's great to see that it's back open. And I know Kelly's excited, so I'll just let her talk about that.
Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you. Good morning. Yeah, we're super excited to reopen the pool after it being closed last summer. Like Susan said, the weather doesn't look fantastic Saturday and Sunday. Monday looks a little bit more promising.
Yeah.
But we will be open starting tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. for early bird lap swim, if you can imagine that, how chilly that's going to be.
Okay. Where's the Furman Pool located?
Yep, it's on 1635 13th Street.
Oh, sure, right there by the Iowa Creek.
Yep.
Yeah, the water park, sure. Okay.
Yep.
Well, yeah, a lot to do there, but yeah, if we'll see what the morning brings. I think the temperatures are going to be in the upper 30, low 40s. So, but I predict there are people that are going to be there because it hasn't been available for so many months.
I completely agree with you. There will definitely be people there.
Yeah. It's almost like a keystone destination for the bike trail and things that go through Brookside Park. I guess that's how I know about that Furman area the most.
Yeah, it's sure easy to get to coming through Brookside or up through the high school trail system as well on 13th Street. We do have bike racks, plenty of them if you want to bike to Furman. It's definitely easily accessible by a bicycle.
Yeah, that's super. That's what a super facility it is. Are there other activities this summer that will be centered around that destination?
That destination, but we have plenty of programs for youth, adults, seniors. Our first summer session of fitness and wellness classes started this week. Still taking registration for that. For this summer, youth programs, we have t-ball coming up, summer camps, tennis lessons, just a number of different activities. We're really excited about, we're trying to partner with the Ames Pickleball Club to offer some pickleball leagues this summer at Inez Grove Park. So the best way to get information on all of our programs from, you know, little kids to adults is www.amesparkrec.org.
Okay. And I think I was out in Oregon and at a pickleball court when I first, I don't know how I missed out on pickleball. Was that something you grew up with?
No, not at all. It's new to me as well.
Oh, you're like me then. Yeah, it seems to be sweeping the country. And primarily, what, just elder or older people, that good form of exercise?
No, it's all ages, actually. I mean, young people, older people, it's for everybody.
Uh-huh. The things we learn on Local Talk.
Yeah. You should come give it a try.
I think I will. I think I'll take you up on that. Where are those courts located?
Yep, Inez Grove Park. And actually, we have courts at Inez Grove, Brookside Park, and Emma McCarthy League. We have lines painted on our tennis courts for pickleball.
Oh, okay. So it does require batting a ball over a net.
Yep, yeah. You got it.
Yeah, okay. And but
if you've not played pickleball, you really need to try it because I didn't grow up with it either, but it's an indoor or outdoor sport. We have leagues, our teams that play at the community center, and it's one of those all-ages sports. I think of it as kind of like badminton. You can you can vary the speed and the tempo of the game based on the skills of the players or the desire of it to be fast-paced, like a ping-pong match, more slow and steady, like a tennis match, or, you know, super intense based on how the players want to play it.
Yeah,
it's really a lot of fun, and I think that fun factor and the fact that all different ages can participate has really contributed to it becoming so popular.
Oh, this is fantastic. Something new.
Mike Metz here, Susan. I just wanted to ask, is this dill or is this sweet pickleball?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's just Mike being himself. It's probably more sweet pickles. I
guess it depends on what league you join.
Oh, what league you're in there? Yeah, of course.
How good you are.
But when you mentioned badminton, of course, we all grew up playing badminton. You don't hardly see that anymore. But I remember in a younger era, it got down to being ultra badminton, which can really be pretty entertaining. And on those days when there's no wind, yeah.
I see that game also making kind of a comeback. And the other one that I hope to see again is croquet, which I always thought was fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You got to love croquet. It gives you a reason to mow the lawn.
I don't know, Kelly. Maybe we could, Ames Parks and Rec should look at a croquet league.
We could try it. We're open to anything.
Yeah. I like it. I like the idea.
I think that's what's so exciting about our local parks and recreation is that we have incorporated user suggestion into some of the offerings. And people are not shy about telling Kelly what they think that the department should offer. And we're very reactive to those requests. So we'll look at it and explore.
It was the pickleball group that came to us and said, hey, would you guys consider doing a league? And, you know, I think that'll be a great partnership.
That's fantastic. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Where else would you learn these developments in the Ames community other than on community radio? But what would be some of those other suggestions that you've had that maybe you've had to slip to the back burner, Kelly?
Oh, you know, we've had lots of requests for Mahjong. It's a board game, and I couldn't find anybody who could teach Mahjong, so we have slipped that to the back burner.
Mahjong. I'll look that up. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty fun. I've not played it before, so I'm not familiar with it.
Some of the recent offerings, like the outdoor yoga, that has been really popular and, you know, sort of found its place during the pandemic.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it was a great option for people. But I had never heard of outdoor yoga, and then all of a sudden Parks and Recreation is offering outdoor yoga at the band shell and around town.
I've seen that. I'm always waiting for somebody to bring their pet goat, you know, to have your pet goat at your yoga and climbing over your shoulders and, you know, that's something besides.
We did have a request for goat yoga this spring.
Oh, okay. There you go. Let's get on that.
We should.
Who out there has the goats for the goat yoga?
Good question.
I really appreciate all the coordination that you do. It really, this is the type of activities that improve the quality in our lives. And you have a very key role to share all these natural amenities that Ames has to offer. You're a very key person.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there anything else?
Come and join us at Furman this summer.
Come
and maybe not this weekend, but come and swim with us.
Okay, well, yeah, water is summer, and it'll be here, I'm sure, sooner than we know. So this is it's great to have. And it's Kelly Omlett, Recreation Superintendent for the City of Ames. And Susan Guiasta, thank you for all that you bring to Local Talk, Susan and Kelly.
Thanks for having us, Pat.
Listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. We just heard from Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and Recreation Superintendent Kelly Omlett. And you've been listening to Wuakwikuna.
Playing the sounds of silence. And yeah. We certainly don't want to hear those sounds of silence. We want to keep this station on the air path.
If we have music that's flutes, you want to enjoy it, absolutely. The message would be, let's not let the airways of KHOY go silent.
And the way we can do this, the way you out there can do this to our listeners is, please, pledge, please contact us. And you can do that in a number of ways. You can call us at 515-292-2878. And that, again, 515-292-2878. Or you can go online at khoifm.org and follow the prompts. We have basic membership starting at $60 a year. That's only $5 a month. We're going to spend more than that for breakfast this morning, Pat. You're going to get a couple of minutes of pleasure. Where can you spend $5 for a month and get all the variety that we have here on our community radio station?
We're attempting to grow this listening community, and the best way to do that, once you become a member, it's okay. In fact, it's deeply appreciated if you share that with your family, and then they're listening.
And then consider becoming a sustaining member. It's like we've talked about water and physical attributes of getting out and exercising, things that sustain us. Well, if you become a sustaining member, that not only helps your budgeting process through the year, but it helps the radio station budget for those needs that we know are coming up, and also gives us a little bit of funding that we can rely on in case we have an emergency come up.
And community funding of a community radio station, without community, there's no station. And we are avoiding the sounds of silence. There are a number of reasons, but I think you can create your own reasons once you start listening. And once you start sharing that knowledge, those tidbits of information, the different themes that are featured each day here at Local Talk. And this radio station goes way, way beyond just Local Talk. When you mention the politics, my goodness, with the Capitol Week that's on Monday evenings at 7.
And it's repeated again Wednesdays over the noon hour.
Yeah. This type of programming is the best it could be, because those two individuals, Laura Bellin and Dennis Hart, are very good at their craft. So that's something that, you know, I'm kind of bringing it up because it's kind of new.
Well, and it not only you're bringing it up for another reason, and that is that where are you going to find local coverage of not only the state issues a little more in depth, but how does that affect us here in Ames and the surrounding community? Story City, Ames, and surrounding communities. That's what we're about, is community radio.
Yeah, once you're at that sustaining level of, and a friend's level of $250 annually, you know, 20 plus bucks a month, it just seems like once you're sharing that, and tell your friends and let them kind of discover something. Thursday afternoons, they used to be just Thursday afternoon. Now is Thursday afternoon with You Name It by Mike Murphy right here. It's particularly the last 2 weeks he's been featuring the celebration of Bob Dylan's 80th birthday. And my good Dylan friends are going after that first week. Man, his repertoire of knowledge when it concerns Bob Dylan is just second to none. So there it is. There's, you've got politics, you've got music, and then you've got all the classical music that KHOI is providing with Roger Berger's program. And then the classics of the screen era with Tom Beale. And then there's the Bob's 8-track
garage sale. It's quite a, I mean, you talk about, you know, on Science Bites, for example, we talk about the electromagnetic spectrum. Well, we're talking about the whole spectrum of music here right now. We cover it all.
It truly is remarkable. Carol Horowitz's interviews. Now I'm going to run the risk of not thinking of everybody, of leaving out that key individual that contributes. But there are contributors. There are volunteers that pour out their heart in honoring these airwaves. And I kind of miss Anna Banana, but her schedule has made it so that we're missing her. But I'm sure all the listeners will be tuning in on Tuesdays and Thursdays when Anna Banana is going to be contributing. And that's when you have your Local Talk, typically, Mike Metz, is on Tuesday mornings. So
Right. And to just get back to the music portion for just a second, not only do you hear just the music, but you get some in-depth knowledge, some tidbits that the folks that bring that to you, they have a passion for what they're doing. They're here as volunteers, and they're doing it for the love of the community. In Stephanie's, DJ Steph's case, the love of music.
Love of music.
That kind of thing. You know, Gildy has his Friday evening program. Cynthia McClure, what a treasure on Sunday evenings, along with Paul Lundy. It just makes your Sunday relaxing so you can face the week.
All things piano.
Michael White for Baroque and Beyond. You know, it was funny. We had one individual didn't understand it's Baroque and Beyond, not Broken Beyond.
It's Baroque.
It's a process of love here for the volunteers.
And award-winning Donna and Lana's Kitchen Show.
There you go.
But you can
become a member by dialing 515-292-2878 during normal business hours, which is call us in, or you can go online at khoifm.org and follow the prompts.
Become a member and then become a sustaining member and grow with KHOI's airwaves.
And Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday and 89.1 FM. And tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. Hit the play KHOI FM button. And remember to support this station by finding the yellow donate button.
Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Runenberg and Lynn Carey. And thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy. And thanks to our guests, Larry Stone, Jess Mazur, and Kaylee Omlid with Susan Guiasta. And thank you, co-host Mike Metz. This is Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard was Daybreak Vision and Ancestral Home by R. Carlos Nakai and The Sounds of Silence by Wua Kui Kuna. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again
on the radio.